Well, Val Page is back in the studio, having very kindly come to talk about another book, which is one of her recent favourites. And that is a book called The Book Thief. Val, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell me why you chose this book, which has got a strange title.
I chose it. Somebody else recommended it in our book group, and we read it, and we all enjoyed it. And I particularly enjoyed it, for personal reasons, actually. Liesl Memminger, who is the little girl in the book, the main character, was 9 years old when the book starts.
And this is around about what stage? This is in the war or before the war?
No, this is after the war has started. And she is on a train going to be fostered by some foster parents in a little town called Molchin, which is near Munich. And when I was 6 years old, the war started. And we had lots of hardships during the war, as you know. And I grew up hating the Germans. It was the Germans who meant that we had to take our gas masks to school and were sent home if we went without it. And it was the Germans who meant we didn't have any ice creams. My little sister couldn't remember what ice creams tasted like, but I could. And it was the Germans who made us get up in the night when those awful wailing sirens started and go down to our reinforced cellar and wait for the all clear. And it was the Germans who made us make do and mend, turn sides to the middles on the sheets, mend our school blouses with darning. I grew to be very good at darning. And as far as I was concerned, every German was a Nazi, and I couldn't wait for the war to end. Now, Liesl Memminger was a little girl who was being taken to foster parents on a train, and on the way, her brother died. They were obviously very poor. They were Germans, and it's not until later on in the book that Liesl finds why she's being taken to foster care. She knows her father has disappeared. She and her mother are very thin. They have sores on their mouths, and clearly they haven't had a good life. On the way in the train, she realises that her little brother, her little six-year-old brother, has died. Her poor, exhausted mother has fallen asleep. And when they reach the next station, the mother has to stop the train because a little boy is dead. They have to take him to be buried. It's thick snow, icy cold. It's very hard for the grave diggers to dig the grave because the ground is so hard. And Liesl just can't believe what has happened. One of the grave diggers is a young lad. He's only about 14. And in his pocket, he's got a book to tell him what to do. It's called The Grave Digger's Journal. And it slips out of his pocket.
Her knees entered the ground. Her moment had arrived. Still in disbelief, she started to dig. He couldn't be dead. He couldn't be dead. He couldn't. Within seconds, snow was carved into her skin. Frozen blood was cracked across her hands. Somewhere in all the snow, she could see her broken heart in two pieces. Each half was glowing and beating under all that white. She realized her mother had come back for her only when she felt the boniness of a hand on her shoulder. She was being dragged away. A warm scream filled her throat. A small image, perhaps 20 meters away. When the dragging was done, the mother and the girl stood and breathed. There was something black and rectangular lodged in the snow. Only the girl saw it. She bent down and picked it up and held it firmly in her fingers. The book had silver writing on it.
And Liesl steals it. So she takes the book with her, I think possibly at the time, because it's a memory of her brother, and they get on the train and carry on. Now, as the book develops, it makes it clear to me that not all Germans were Nazis. As I grew older, of course, I met German people after the war and found that they were people just like us, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them were, and that not every German was a Nazi. And this book made me really, really brought it home to me that the war was just as bad for them, ordinary people, as it was for us. And that's really what the book meant to me.
Okay, we'll come back to various aspects of that. But one of the things, if you look at the community in the small town that the girl goes to, Liesl goes to, there are various shades of people, if you like.
And oh,
those
yes.
Those who are quite adamant in their support of
yes.
the Nazi regime. There are those who survive by, if you like, collaborating. There are those whose instinct is against it.
Yes.
And the couple, which I'm not going to give too much of the plot away because this is all quite early on, but they actually are looking, they hide a Jew.
Yes.
And it save him by keeping him in their basement.
Yes.
During the daytime.
Mm.
She herself gets to know this Jew. Obviously, she spends time with him. But before that relationship develops, she has to get to know her foster parents.
Mm.
And one of the things that the foster father has is a library of books. So we're beginning to develop this theme of, and she's stolen the first book, as it were, and then she discovers there are all these books, which she obviously hadn't encountered before.
Mm.
Do you think that's... he teaches her to read, doesn't he?
Well, yes. She obviously is sent to school, and it's very horrible for her because she's never learned to read because she's hardly been to school. She finds out, as I say later, that her parents were communists. And obviously life has been very hard for communists under the German regime. And so she is put in with the young children, which she finds very humiliating. She was so lucky in that her foster parents, Hans Humermann and Rosa, were very good foster parents. Hans, realising that she couldn't read, she didn't even know her letters, teaches her to read. And the time that he does this is when she has her nightmares in the middle of the night and wakes up screaming night after night. And he goes into her room and he holds her, and then he teaches her how to read.
4 years later, when she came to write in the basement, two thoughts struck Liesl about the trauma of wetting the bed. First, she felt extremely lucky that it was Papa who discovered the book. Fortunately, when the sheets had been washed previously, Rosa had made Liesl strip the bed and make it up. "And be quick about it, Zaumensch. Does it look like we've got all day?" Second, she was clearly proud of Hans Hubermann's part in her education. "You wouldn't think it," she wrote, "but it was not so much the school who helped me to read. It was Papa. People think he's not so smart, and it's true that he doesn't read too fast, but I would soon learn that words and writing actually saved his life once. Or at least, words and a man who taught him the accordion." "First things first," Hans Hubermann said that night. He washed the sheets and hung them up. "Now," he said upon his return, "let's get this midnight class started."
Rosa, foster mother, and she's told to call them Papa and Mama, which she does, although she never gives up hope that her mum will come back one day, which of course she isn't going to because she's probably gone to a death camp somewhere. But Rosa is a different kettle of fish. She's a little woman described like a wardrobe with clothes thrown over her. She swears a lot. She calls Liesl Saumensch, which means pig person. And that's one of her favourite epithets. But underneath it all, she gets very fond of little Liesl. And she's very strict. She's a washerwoman. She takes in people's washing. And after Hans has taught Rosa how to read, she goes to the mayor's house one day to pick up the washing for her foster mother to do. And when she's there, she goes into the library and she sees this wonderful shelf after shelf of books. And she's absolutely ecstatic about it. And she remembers to thank the mayor's wife. She comes back to thank her before she goes. And I think the mayor's wife gets quite fond of her, and she takes the washing home to her mum.
It may seem as if it's a fairly dark story because the context in which it's written is not exactly full of laughs, and yet it never came across to me as a very dark one, even though, and this is a sort of key point, the narrator is death.
Yes.
And this may seem like more and more off-putting, but in fact it's not, is it?
No. For anybody who's read any Terry Pratchett books, death is a character in that. But death as a character in those books is very impersonal. Death in this book is the narrator, and he's very compassionate, gathering up the dead souls and taking care of them. And he is able to see every aspect of what goes on because he is a mythical figure and he can see what goes on. And he is the one who manages to see all aspects of Liesl's life and everybody else's life in the story, including her next-door neighbours. Because I think that is a very matter-of-fact sort of part of the book, a very joyful part. The Steiners, who live next door to the Hubermans, have six children, one of which is a boy called Rudy. Now, Liesl after she settled in, is allowed to go and play in the street with a gang, as so many children did in this country during the war. I did. There weren't cars going backwards and forwards in those days. We played knockout ginger, and we played games in the street, with the boundaries of the game being the stink pole and the lamppost. And she went scrumping with the gang, and she played football with them. She had a fight with Rudy, because she was quite a feisty little girl. And after the fight, she and Rudy became best friends. And Rudy is a lovely character. He loves running. And his hero is a man called Jesse Owens, who I've never heard of, who is an American runner. And he is so enamoured of this American runner that one day he covers himself with charcoal and goes to the place where you run laps and runs round, and he gets really told off for that very much. Yes. Because he imagines one day he'll be a runner. And it's good that she plays with these children. She has a normal life. She's got a mama and a papa. And then, of course, when she becomes 10 years old, she has to join Hitler Youth. There's no way about it. There's no way she can get out of it. All children have to join Hitler Youth.
And by that stage, she knows that there's somebody hiding in the cellar?
No, I think it was a little bit later on. Right. So he was a Jew whose father once did a favour for Hans Hubermann. And Hans is a very lovely character, actually. He cares a lot for his little foster daughter, as much as if it was his own daughter. He has a daughter and a son, but they're both left home working away. And the son is very much a Nazi and very contemptuous of his father, Hans, because he hasn't joined the Nazi party. Apparently you had a choice whether you joined the Nazi party. Not much of a choice, because they made life very difficult for you if you didn't. And Hans was a painter and decorator. Down in his basement, he'd got dust cloths, paint tins, and when the Jewish man came to live there, he came for help via a sort of underground railway. You know, he'd been passed on from one character to another, and he hid him there amongst the dust cloths. And when the Nazi inspectors came round to see if the basement, the Huberman's basement, would be suitable for turning into an air raid shelter, the Jewish man was there, Max, and he was hiding. He was a young man, he was only about 20, and he was hiding amongst the dust cloths and the tins, and they didn't see him. And you can imagine how tense everybody felt in the household. Mm-hmm. If he were found, that would be the end of their life. But fortunately, he wasn't found.
I mean, there you mentioned him, and one of the things the book does is it builds relationships between these different people quite successfully. And what is it, you mentioned the character of death, as it were, is not at all somber. I mean, you almost get to know him as another character in the book.
Oh, he is, and he's very compassionate, and you feel he does care about people. Particularly, he felt he shouldn't get too close to the little boy who was being buried in the snow and the ice in the churchyard. But he did, and he got particularly interested in Liesl and her foster family.
When the coughing stopped, there was nothing but the nothingness of life moving on with a shuffle or a near-silent twitch. A suddenness found its way onto his lips then, which were a corroded brown colour and peeling like old paint, in desperate need of redoing. Their mother was asleep. I entered the train. My feet stepped through the cluttered aisle, and my palm was over his mouth in an instant. No one noticed. The train galloped on. Except the girl. With one eye open, one still in a dream, the book thief, also known as Liesl Memminger, could see without question that her younger brother, Werner, was now sideways and dead. His blue eyes stared at the floor, seeing nothing.
Needless to say, Liesl never again saw her mother.
Sure.
Yes. I was going to say that then at one time, the Nazis thought that all the books that people owned were bad, and they had a great bonfire and burnt all the books. And Liesl couldn't bear to see the books being burnt. And when the fire had died down and all the people had gone home, she managed to rescue one book from the embers, and she held it under her jacket. And it sort of burnt against her chest all the way home. So that was the second book that she stole.
Now, fire, of course, has a lot of different meanings. And one of the disasters for the German people as the war progressed was the bombing of the towns and villages. And this comes into the story as well, doesn't it? This is part of the later part of the book. And in fact, of course, when the bombing happens, you mentioned the cellar, whether it will be a good place to escape from the bombing. There are sections where they're describing the real agony for the people who were in that, the fear and the horror of what was going on above them. So that's part of this understanding of the whole range of different people that there were within this community.
Yes. There was one of the cellars up the road which had been converted into an air raid shelter, as our own cellar was made into an air raid shelter, and other people used to come to ours. As they sat in the cellar, they were terrified. They thought that their little town of Molkin would not be bombed, but when the Allied bombers came over, they were bombed. And to begin with, they were fine. Later on, of course, the bombing got worse. Houses got bombed. Friends got killed. And there was one occasion when they were all down the cellar and they were all panicking. And Liesl had a book with her. And she started to read this book. I can't remember what it was called now. And she started to read the book and everybody quietened down and the panic stopped as Liesl managed to read some of the book. And then the all clear sounded and they went back to their homes. And I thought the interesting thing was there was a woman who lived on the corner who despised Huberman. She'd got a shop and every time she passed their front door, she spat at it. She despised them because they hadn't joined the Nazi party, which Hans actually later tried to do for the sake of his family. After the incident in the cellar, when Liesl had read the book to them, which hadn't finished it, she came along to the Huberman's house and knocked on the door without spitting on it and asked Liesl if she would come and carry on reading the book to her a little bit each day, and she would pay her. And of course, they were very hard up and it was very good to get the money. And so that's what Liesl did. And the woman on the corner stopped spitting on the door every time she went past. So Liesl did manage to pay the Hubermans back in some to some extent for the care they'd taken from her. But it wasn't just that. They really loved her. And, you know, no parents need payment for loving their children.
Thank you very much, Val. I just want to mention the author's name, Markus Zusak, the author of The Book Thief, which is described actually on the cover as a novel of breathtaking scope, masterfully told, which I think we tried to convey that although there's quite a dark era of our time, it's actually told very engagingly. And it's a very long audiobook. I think it's about 80 chapters or so, and it's a long book.
But some of the chapters are short.
Yes, and the language is not too complicated. It moves fairly quickly, shorter sentences and shorter almost.
Yes.
And it's a very engaging book. You can just pick it up and want to stay with it, and the same with the audiobook. Once you've started listening, you want to carry on listening to it because it conveys the essence of it very well.
I can imagine, yes.
Thank you very much, Val.
And I think, just one more thing, without giving the ending away, I think people will be quite happy with the ending. I do like a book that has a happy ending.
Thank you very much, Val. The music accompanying this edition of the Talking Bookshelf is called Good Times. It was composed and recorded by Goffby of Kenilworth, who's very generously given us permission to use his music. The extract used in this discussion was provided by Calibre Audiobooks. Calibre is a registered charity providing audiobooks to those who are unable to read printed books, whether for reasons of visual or other impairment. Calibre has over 8,000 titles in its catalogue. All of them can be requested as an MP3 memory stick or as a single MP3 CD.